All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Guiding Light. And we are looking at Bernadette Roberts, What is the Self? And we are looking at Bernadette's perception of the ego. And we're beginning today at the bottom of page 18. And what she has been commenting on is that the ego is not 100%, that there's a pinhole in the center of the ego, which gives us direct access to the divine. And she says that the ego, when it aims for good instead of for bad or for evil, when the ego aims for good, what it's aiming for is that pinhole. And we talked last week about going very, very deep into whatever access we have to awareness, whatever access we have to the divine. And so this is where we're beginning, again, at the bottom of page 18. Initially, there is a tendency to believe that self-awareness is primarily a mental process, and therefore awareness of the divine is also a mental process. Thus, many people making the spiritual journey start out by striving to keep the divine in mind at all times. But once we begin the passage in earnest, we gradually discover that true self-awareness and true awareness of the divine are not mental at all. The first lesson we learn is that true awareness is not centered in the mind or in any mental process. Instead, it is centered at the point of the triangle we mentioned earlier: feeling, being, will, or life forced. So the triangle that she mentioned earlier, since that was a few weeks ago, really kind of starts up here. It starts up here like this, with the mind bending on itself. You have two points, subject, object. And then it comes down to a point right here, to the heart, which again is the will to be. The will to be. So this is the point she's talking about right here. And again, what she says about that is, instead of self-awareness being a mental process, it is centered at the point of the triangle we mentioned earlier: feeling, being, will, or life force, which is the feeling self prior to any movements that arise from this feeling center. This awareness is actually our experience of being prior to all reflective thoughts that arise in the mind regarding self and the divine. So I think some of you probably know that even though I call it awareness watching awareness, because to me it is a type of awareness watching awareness, the types of meditation that I really practice, and they go together for me, are self-inquiry and loving consciousness. And I often listen to the 30-minute loving consciousness audios that I made for Gentle Healing Year One during the first half hour of my meditation. And then, you know, when the audio ends, I just stay in the meditation. But that means I get to hear those words a lot from Michael Langford's late book. I say late because he's no longer publishing it. Michael Langford's late book, How to Live a Life That Knows Only Love. And one of the things he says in that book is that 1 hour of meditation from the heart is worth 1,000 hours of meditation from the head. And he also says that most aspirants practice self-awareness from the head. And that's exactly what she's saying right now. She's saying that most people start off, you know, practicing self-awareness or trying to experience the divine in a mental way from the head. And she says, but eventually we realize that it's not mental. It's centered in this feeling self, right? The heart, the devotional self. So it's an interesting trick, especially if you're a person that, you know, is setting your alarm because you have to get up and go to work in an hour or an hour and a half or whatever, to get that meditation out of the head and into the heart. And that, of course, is what the loving consciousness meditation is all about. And one of the suggestions that Michael Langford makes about loving consciousness is that prior to meditating, you might listen to some inspirational music. For me, and I think you guys know this, I've said it a million times, I typically like to contemplate before I meditate. Because contemplate brings me into my heart in a very big way. Right, I talked about that last week. I talked about it being almost like an erection in the heart when I contemplate. So it brings me into the heart in a very strong way. And then I can close my eyes and go into meditation. And I'm meditating from the heart instead of from the head. But again, what we have here are two what I think are very good teachers telling us, and in fact, maybe three. I remember somebody asked Ramana Maharshi a question about self-inquiry once. And I remember the exact question for answer. And the answer was that it was more of a feeling, right? That was the answer. It was more of a feeling. So I think that in answering self-inquiry is more of a feeling, he is pointing to the heart. I'll just repeat what Michael Langford said. 1 hour of meditating from the heart is worth more than 1,000 hours of meditating from the head. So if we accept that is true, then one of the challenges maybe for some of us is to find out what works for us. What drops us into the heart, into that devotional state, so that when we're meditating from the heart, from love, instead of from the head. So again, she says, instead, it is centered. She says, the first lesson we learn is that true awareness is not centered in the mind or any mental process. Instead, it is centered at the point of the triangle we mentioned earlier, feeling, being, will, or life force, which is the feeling self prior to any movements that arise from this feeling center. This awareness is actually our experience of being prior to all reflective thoughts that arise in the mind regarding the self and the divine. But no matter how numerous or blissful our experiences of the divine, there is no lasting satisfaction with transient experiences. We want what most of all is a permanent state of continuous awareness of the divine, awareness of an abiding oneness and union. Since by its very nature, the thinking, remembering mind is incapable of such a feat, this abiding awareness must take place on the most profound level of the unconscious psyche or self, a level we cannot attain of our own accord, because whatever we can do is limited solely to the conscious self. That's very interesting. I'm reading from What is the Self. That's very interesting because it reminds me of something that Jesus said to the apostles. He said, with man, this is impossible. But with God, all things are possible. And that's what she's saying. She's saying you being the person, can't do this. And it appears that's what Jesus said too. So if you can't do this, then why the heck should you spend an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours a day in contemplation, meditation, etc.? And first of all, I don't think you should. I think that's the coming from the head that we're talking about. You know, it doesn't mean that your body won't set down and there won't be participation, but the you that that struggles and tries to do things, accomplish tasks, that's not what gets us done. One image that's been in my mind since maybe the very first time I ever closed my eyes and tried to meditate at all, which would have been, you know, many years ago, 2004, probably, maybe 2005 at the latest. No, I'm sure it was 2004, because I remember right where I was. There was this feeling that when I just closed my eyes, and then I didn't know what awareness was or anything, I was just attempting to be still. So when I just close my eyes and be still, I am giving the opportunity for, and in the language of that time, for the Holy Spirit to wake me up. But you see, what I'm doing is providing the opportunity. I'm not doing the waking up. I'm not making this happen. I'm getting out of the way. And I'm allowing it to happen. And I still have that sense when I go into meditation. You know, how many years later, right? 15 years later. Wow, has it been that long? I've been on the spiritual path for 15 years. Don't tell anybody. 15 years later. You know, still when I close my eyes and I go into meditation, what I really feel like, you know, the I, the mental I, the person I is there to do is just to get out of the way and let meditation happen. Let awakening happen. Let healing happen, right? I'm not doing it. I'm getting out of the way. So again, no matter how numerous or blissful our experiences of the divine, there is no lasting satisfaction with transient experiences. What we want most of all is a permanent state of continuous awareness of the divine, awareness of an abiding oneness and union. Since by its very nature, the thinking, remembering mind is incapable of such a feat. This abiding awareness must take place on the most profound level of the unconscious psyche or self, a level we cannot attain of our own accord, because whatever we can do is limited solely to the conscious self. Another term that comes to mind as I read this is just the word marinate. Right, you want to just marinate in awareness, marinate in stillness. You know, you aren't doing anything, right? You're marinating. Beyond a certain point then, or at the limit of our own doing, the divine must take the initiative. Thus, when some unknown critical point is reached, I love the way she says that, when some unknown critical point is reached. Yeah, Jay says the divine then serves him up on the grill. Absolutely. I love this, some unknown critical point. You know, how do we know when we're done and we can be taken off the grill, you know? How do we know when we're done? It's, you know, you hear all different stories about awakenings. If you listen to awakening stories, like Muji's story was when he was embarrassed by Papaji making fun of him. And he ran back to his room, was angrily packing, angrily wondering why he came here, thinking angry thoughts about Papaji. And he awoke. That was the critical point for him. You know, does that mean that we should all get really angry because we might wake up? Of course not. But, you know, even though I laugh at that, I think that's what people do. Not necessarily get really angry, but I think what they do is they study masters and they learn what masters did, how masters woke up, and then they try to copy them. And how can you copy an unknown critical point? Hear that word, unknown. And you don't know what your unknown critical point is. So in a way, all you can do is live and trust all things. Right? Trust all things as they're happening for you. So beyond a certain point then, or at the limit of our own doing, the divine must take the initiative. Thus, when some unknown critical point is reached, or when we have done all we can from our side of consciousness to attain this permanent awareness, the divine takes the initiative and breaks through the unconscious center of consciousness. So remember, we talked about the pinhole. I got a little hole in my Kleenex here, right? So, you know, maybe what I'm doing is I'm focusing on awareness and meditation. I'm playing awareness games throughout the day. I am contemplating. I am doing my best to speak and live from the right mind instead of the wrong mind, because these are all things I've learned. And I'm doing all of this, but then I'm on this side. All of a sudden, the divine, see if I can make this happen. Bust through. See? The divine does the busting through, not me. And then I have that bigger hole, right? A stronger feeling of the divine, a stronger relationship with the divine. So the divine busts through. I don't bust through. It's interesting, huh? But at the same time, it doesn't mean that we don't continue to do what we're taught to do, because the fact that we are here learning these practices is a part of the process, a part of the script, a part of our way. If that wasn't true, we wouldn't be here, right? So the divine takes the initiative and breaks through the unconscious center of consciousness. Since the self-center or ego had been that in ourselves which experienced the divine as well as experienced itself, without the ego, we are also without our experience of the divine. And we've talked about this before. In other words, take away that which experienced the divine and that which it experienced, the divine goes with it. Underline, the self-center is the divine center. Thus, to come upon the divine without this medium, the self-center or the ego must fall away. And that takes us to a new section, no ego experience. So we've been talking about the ego, and we've been talking about how the ego is helpful in the awakening experience. But also what we just now saw is that even though the ego is helpful in the awakening experience, even though it is the ego's self-will turned towards the divine that leads us to practice and that brings us to the threshold of the doorway, it's actually the divine that, you know, you could say, this is another analogy, but you could say reaches through over the threshold and snatches us into the doorway, right? We can bring ourselves to the threshold, but we can't get ourselves across it. And then once we're pulled across the threshold, there is no ego. So we've looked at how the ego is helpful in the awakening experience. We've seen that God takes the last step, not the ego, right? Jacqueline wrote that almost as exactly as I said it. God takes the final step. And now we're going to start looking at the no ego experience. So this is on the other side of the threshold. The divine's breaking through the center of consciousness shatters the ego like a hole made in the center of ourselves. That's what this represents now. Now notice there's still Kleenex here, and I think she's going to talk about that. But where the ego was, there's a great big giant hole. Right? The divine's breaking through the center of consciousness shatters the ego like a hole made in the center of ourselves. With this sudden breakthrough, we now have an empty hole in the center of ourselves. Instead of the ego or self center, we now have a divine center, an empty hole. Instead of a pinhole, there's a great big giant hole. Instead of the ego or self center, we now have a divine center, an empty hole. The empty center is two things at once. It is the absence of self and the presence of the divine. There is no self center anymore. There is only a divine center. We might visualize this arrangement as a donut or a Kleenex with a hole in the middle of it. Consciousness or self is the bread that experiences an empty center in itself. From here on, consciousness or self will be egoless. Obviously, there has been a radical change of consciousness. There has been an upheaval to which we have no choice but to acclimate. So, no ego, which is why we have a great big giant hole in the middle of this Kleenex, but we still have consciousness. That's what the Kleenex represents. And like she says, this is a huge difference. This is a huge difference compared to this. Can you guys even see that little hole in there? Maybe. Yeah, you see the hole. Right? This is what we experienced before, was that little pinhole of the divine, and the ego was kind of around that. In fact, let me go ahead and just draw a little circle that represents the ego. Oh, never mind, because my pen won't write on the Kleenex. Anyway, imagine a little circle around that hole. And now that whole circle, that whole sense of self is gone. Right? There's a great big giant hole where that sense of self was. And this is why people will often say they look and they see no self. It's gone. It is gone. But awakening isn't complete yet, because there's still a lot of Kleenex here. It's almost like a new self, right? And Jesus called it being born again. It's self as consciousness, or a unitive self, a united self, rather than self as a person. So again, with the sudden breakthrough, we now have an empty hole in the center of ourselves. Instead of the ego or self center, we now have a divine center, an empty hole. The empty center is two things at once. It is the absence of self and the presence of the divine. There is no self center anymore. There is only a divine center. We might visualize this arrangement as a donut. Consciousness or self is the bread that experiences an empty center in itself. From here on, consciousness or self will be egoless. Obviously, there has been a radical change of consciousness. There has been an upheaval to which we have no choice but to acclimate. So again, the experience is very, very, very different. And again, Jesus called it being born again, right? And it takes some time to acclimate to this experience. And many people mistake this experience for the final awakening. But as we will see as we go forward with Bernadette, it is not the final awakening. However, Bernadette awoke to this experience as a young lady. I don't remember if it was 17 or 19. It was somewhere in that range as a young lady. She was much older, much more mature when she had her final awakening. By then she'd had children. Her boys were teenagers, right? So I think 20 years or so. I don't remember the exact number, but I think it's around 20 years past before she had her next awakening. She talks about many people see this change or upheaval as a process of transformation. She says, but I see it as a process of acclimating to the divine center. That became the next purpose, was to acclimate to this whole. But she doesn't call it a transformation, because she's looking from beyond this experience. She knows that that is not the actual awakening experience. It's just a period of acclimation to this new state of being. And I'm out of time, so I'm going to stop there. And I will finish, well, not, I won't finish for probably a year or two. I will continue next week. So I'm releasing the mic. Thank you.